Pain.
The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list, and a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist, and an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here.
Good afternoon, and welcome once again to WWDB AM 860, The Conservative Voice. We are back in the studio for another show. We've got a great show lined up for you today. It's going to be interesting. We're going to start out with someone that we met a couple of days ago. I spent a day walking in Kensington with some friends, and we're going to explore that a little bit with Rock the Barber, who I spent a couple of hours with. It was great. But then we're going to move on to a conversation with Shannon Grady, who is a Moms for Liberty County Chair, who has done a lot of work to try to protect our children in schools. And then we're going to move on to Catherine Austin Fitz, who will be our guest at 1 o'clock, who will help us understand some of the geopolitical issues and what's going on in the country. And she's a great resource on money and banking issues. So we'll have a fascinating discussion in that second hour. So welcome, Philadelphia, to WWDB AM 860, The Conservative Voice. This is Gary Heasley, and in the studio with me is Ada Nestor.
Hello, glad to be here. Excited for another Friday.
Yeah, glad to have you with us. And so let me just go back and touch again on this idea of the what I did in Kensington, took this walk in Kensington, as I call it. We went in because Kensington is the neighborhood in this area that is always in the news because of the, you know, the incredible crisis of the drugs. And we've all seen the images of the addicts in a zombie state walking around Kensington. And it's an incredibly troubling thing to see. So I thought I'd go down and walk with some people and find out what's happening there. And we started out in a crisis pregnancy center, Magnolia Women's Center, which is just a beautiful facility. It's now open. It is surrounded by abortion mills, but yeah, it's the only place in that area where there's a center that's going to help women explore their real options and not just push them down one path. And that was a wonderful discussion. And we'll have some more talk about that going forward. Then we spent some time with a gentleman who walks his niece to work or to school every day because she's 8 years old and she's walking on those streets and she's looking at what she's looking at. And to walk the streets and think about the eyes of an 8-year old seeing the needles and yeah, the paraphernalia and the zombies and things. It's troubling. We also then, I spent some time with a great patriot down there who's working hard to turn things around. And then I spent a couple hours in this barbershop. And the reason I did that is because what I've been hearing is that the folks of that barbershop, the men in that barbershop, are spending their time mentoring young men to make sure that they don't end up in the same dark place that maybe some of the other folks are.
Yeah.
And the barber there is named Rock, and I think Rock is with us right now. Rock, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm here. How you doing, guys?
I'm doing well. Hey, welcome to the Conservative Voice on WWDB.
I'm glad to be a part of it. Thank you.
Yeah, and
glad to be in studio right now.
Well, you know, we may end up having you join us again, maybe sometime when you can be physically with us.
Yes, sir.
But the day, you know, we had a great experience when we were together in your barbershop, just you know, talking about what's going on. Why don't you help us out here a little bit to understand what it is you guys are doing and what you think these young men today are facing and how you're helping them kind of work through it. What's the real deal for people on the in those communities? What are the pressures that they're facing?
Well, Gary, most of the pressure is coming from the social presence of the children nowadays. They're only learning from themselves and not learning from their parents, which is causing a bigger issue than people to pay attention to. So, with that being said, us barbers, We're community leaders. We're individual men and women who talk to these people every day. So us talking to people every day, we kind of learn the ins and outs of what people got going on in their lives. And with that being said, we're trying to figure out ways within the city limits and the government and officials that we work with ourselves to help people get over this mental this mental stagnancy that they have right now. So basically, that's what we've been doing: grabbing the children off the streets. Well, not off the streets, but out of our barbershops and in neighborhoods, and coping with them as parents. Like, you know, sometimes you need a community to raise a child, and we're becoming that community again. But the only difference is we already have the community year and age, because they're already trusting us already. So that helps a lot with the fact that they have that trust in us already. They sit in our chairs every day.
Yeah, you know, I noticed when I was there that there was a young man, maybe, I don't know, 14, 15, possibly. I don't know exactly how old. And he just popped in. You're cutting someone's hair. He shakes hands, you know, just turns around and leaves. Yeah. It wasn't apparent that he came in for anything other than just to say, hey, how are you? And it shows how integrated the barbershop is in the community. It you know, when you think about it, they're walking by every day. That kid was in school clothes, I think. So he was just coming home from school, I assume. And it was a cool thing to see him just slide in there and know that in his community there's some folks he can connect with.
Yeah, they love to relate to the barbers in the barbershop, as long as we're relatable. You know, you have to be relatable first for people to relate to you.
And by being relatable, I think you mean, you know, it's not about getting these young men in there and lecturing them and putting them under pressure. They got enough pressure now.
Just being that community figure that they can look up to and realize that everybody ain't out here to get something from them or have them doing something more than just caring about them. You know, I'll sit in the window and see these kids walk past, and I wave at them and say hi to them. But if I'm standing at the door, I speak to the parents that walk past, you know, not because of business, not because I'm trying to get them in my barbershop for money, just to say hi. Like, you know, sometimes that's what people need. They need that good nature, that person that's going to make their day feel much better than whatever it is. You know, sometimes we be having the worst day in the world, and one person can change that whole thing around.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, a positive influence in somebody's life can offset a lot of negative influences. And just looking around the shop, you know, at the folks that are there, it's clear, at least it seemed to me, that everybody, there's just an atmosphere there. There's just an attitude. It's just a comfortable place to spend. I had a great time just hanging out in the barber chair talking to you.
And we appreciate you being here, Jerry.
Yeah.
And you're always welcome to come back.
Well, if I'm in the area, I'll be dropping in. So, when we were talking about the issues facing these kids, a lot of what you were talking about were what you mentioned. It's the family that's maybe not intact, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've
sometimes,
got the, go ahead.
You know, there's not a father there, you know, and that you know, these children don't have a father, a figure. So when they see us barbers, we're strong, we're strong-minded, we're civil individuals that have their own business. We're saturated with the neighborhood. We're saturated with the neighborhood. Thank you. Everything we do has intentions of the neighborhood and in the background. We don't just cut hair. We're the mentors. We're the teachers. We're the after-school program sometimes, because kids come in after school and they just here all day to get their hair cut. But within the time they're here, they're around other men and other adults that can teach them things they might not find at home. And that's what the barbershop is made up of.
And without a positive male role model in the life of a young man, it's hard to understand how they find their bearings, right? I mean, it's true for girls as well. They also need a father figure, at least, you know, someone that they could be close to that is going to show them what it is to be a man and how a man behaves with women. I mean, that's
you know, mm-hmm. we're working on that part of the situation, which we're going to start working with Dallas, whereas though the mentorship program can work with, along with Dallas and the mothers, where we can actually talk to the little ladies, the females and ladies, and have that culture mixed in and intertwined. But it's a little bit harder because of the fact that the way the world is now. So it's a little bit harder.
Yeah, the way the world is now presents some new challenges. You know,
yeah.
As we were walking around Kensington, we saw, And it was Kensington and Port Richmond that we really spent time in. And we saw, you know, the tragedies, the human tragedies on the sidewalk. I mean, it's troubling.
They just gave up on their neighborhood. I used to be, my mom used to live close to the area.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't live in that area. So I thought, as growing up as a child, that was kind of one of the shopping areas that was a major shopping area at the time. It was nothing but stores all the way up and down it. From Huntington Park and Kensington all the way down to, I could say, all the way to Gerard. Yeah. It was nothing but businesses at one point in time. So I thought the movement, yeah.
Yeah, they were community businesses. They were owned by people in the community. They line the streets. So,
yeah,
they were
either community businesses or warehouses, they were big businesses or small businesses. They all worked in unison. They were clothing stores, they were sneaker stores, food stores, supermarket, small meat market. I remember it being a fudge store down there. I remember it being all kinds of stuff, milk market.
Well. When I was walking with the gentleman, his name was Rich Bennett, that took me on the path that his niece walks to school, and he pointed out storefronts that were empty.
Yeah.
He pointed out that there are, just businesses that are gone.
Yeah.
And when I was down there a couple of weeks ago for a town hall where we met, when we were there to support, candidate for Congress, and we were – when. I was talking to someone about what's going on in the neighborhood. They said, well, look up and down the street. None of these businesses are owned by people in this community anymore. You know, they're owned by people that have either come here from other places and have tax advantages and other things that allow them to open up, or they're corporations.
I can see right now the corporations are taking over all the neighborhoods. The economics that is going on with real estate, corporations are going to the they're going to all these auctions and these home auctions, and they're buying out property places, blocks. They're because they have the buying power. People don't have the buying power no more. So that's an issue there. The people in the neighborhoods don't have the buying power. They're forcing people out of their houses because everything's going up. So people are selling out to these corporations, and these corporations are coming in, building apartment buildings and rooms and condominiums and taking the prices up within the city.
Wow. So when I was in the area, right, I would see some homeless people, some folks that are obviously addicts that are struggling with drugs and the fentanyl, which, you know, as we say, is a chemical weapon, right? It's not accidental that we have huge amounts of fentanyl coming from the Chinese Communist Party to the cartels, to the streets of Kensington and Port Richmond and Philadelphia. And as we're walking through and we're looking at that, we'd be walking past brand new housing, and some of it not high density, low income housing. We're talking about in some cases very high end housing.
Yep.
What I'm gonna say to you, Gary, about that. Personally, it's called it's a push that's going on right now, and most of the neighborhoods neighborhoods we know it, but it's nothing we really can do about it. What's going on now in Kensington is that all those the individual people that are being pushed into these facilities that are offering the fentanyl into the things and the drugs and stuff inside the places, and from there they've been pushed into other areas, and from those areas that they're being pushed into is going to make the level of the price cost go down in the area, so the corporation's going to come in and take over there. So what's happening is it's a full circle thing that's going on right now. So within, I guess, about 2 more years, that area down there, Kensington, won't be there like that. It'll be up here where I am.
Yeah. Yeah, because Kensington is going to be completely rebuilt, isn't it? That's what's going on, is a total redevelopment.
Yeah, rehabilitation, everything.
But that's not curing any problem. That's just moving a problem somewhere else, right?
Relocating.
Somewhere else for now.
So the big developers are coming in. They're building these projects, and these are nice. I mean, this is upscale housing. This isn't low-income housing. And then they just push people down. In fact, what I heard when I was walking about is that the city pushed all of the homeless and the drug addicts and stuff off the streets while some developers came in to see the neighborhood. And then once the developers left, of course, everybody was free to come back.
Yeah.
But then the deals got inked and they started the building. And I drove around quite a bit, so I saw some of the buildings.
Yeah.
But none of that solves the problem. And I think we have two issues right now. One is that most Americans aren't really paying attention to the problem. We are complacent, maybe a little gullible, but we're not really paying attention to the problem. But the other one is you can't just focus on the problem, right? We want people to understand what's going on, but we also want them to see a path to a solution. And I think the mentoring work that you're doing is a critical part of this, because the way I see it, and this is what I was thinking when we met and why I came to see you again, the hole you're filling in maybe the lives of some of these young people, men for now, maybe young women too at another time. You know,
I'm starting to see it changing a lot of the young men now, Gary. I'm not going to tell you no lie. These young men are starting to realize that jail is not the thing to do. A lot of them want out of it. They want out, like, but they don't have the means to get out. They don't have a resource to come to them or be able to help them to go the opposite way. And that's what we're offering. We're showing them the way and mentoring them through the process, because sometimes they don't know how to present themselves. They've lost the means of presenting themselves. They lost the means of how to dress during meetings or just for interviews or how to talk or write resumes or those small things that mean something. Even to the point where now the schools are not even offering them to learn how to sign their signatures. I'm trying to figure out how does that work, because when you sign a check, you have to have a cursive signature. And when I was in a doctor's office the other day, they asked me for my cursive name and then my print name. So if they're not teaching that no more in school, what's change going to be for? Because are they just saying, well, okay, everything is going to be computer generated, but where's the learning with that?
Right.
That's going to come down to education all over the world.
But I mean, it's interesting what we're talking about. You know, what you're doing is just helping them understand the basic fundamentals of moving forward and dealing with daily life. And it's just a reality that a lot of kids in a lot of neighborhoods and at multiple, you know, sort of demographics, they've lost some of those problem solving skills and just the basic life skills. I don't know how that happened.
Well, the idea of the two parent home, as a former single mother, I know that personally I would be very offended if someone implied to me that I was not good enough to raise my child on my own. And so there was a lot of ego involved in that. And it took a lot for me to accept the fact that that is true. There is a benefit to a child in a two-parent house that no matter how good of a job I was doing at the time, it made no difference to the fact that there was just one of me. There are things that I cannot teach my children on my own, and that a male has been. My husband's incredible. He's been awesome in picking up that place and teaching my children those things. But there is there's almost an offensiveness. If someone says, like, you know, part of the problems are from single family households, these children don't have what they need and two parents raising them, people get really offended by that. And again, I'm speaking from personal experience, but now, you know, 20 years in the future, I can see how true that is. I can see the benefit of that. So when you have mentors in their community filling in and, you know, stepping in and giving the little guidances and helping them understand the signatures and the resumes and the things that are going to give them a good step forward, that's vital. It is absolutely vital. And every community should have it. Every community should be doing that within themselves, because this is not a Philly problem. This is a across the country problem.
I agree very much. So with that, also with us in the program, we do reach out to the parents, especially the mothers. Sometimes I actually go to the mothers directly and talk to them and sit down with them and have a conversation about what they may be challenging, the challenge they may be facing with their children. Because once you find out the challenges that they're facing, then you can help them better understand what needs to be done for their child. Not saying that they are great or they're not great mothers or fathers.
Yep.
Just saying that some things, we're so busy during the day that we forget those things that were taught years ago. And it's just like if you put a bunch of people in a circle and you say one thing to the first person, like you say,
right,
fill the bucket, and see how many people go around in that circle, and when it comes back to you, what's going to be said to you. It's just like that. So, you know, it's like a circle of people that, as it goes through people, it comes down more and more. So it takes the first individual to actually stop and say, okay, you know what, I can't give this to the one person to expect them to give it to the next person, the next person, the next person, and everybody acts the same way. I got to stop and give it to every single person in that circle. So when it comes back to me, everybody has the same thing.
Yeah. You know, these are great points. And the fact that you'll sit down with these mothers and talk to them, I think, is really important. I know a situation. I did a principal for a day thing in a school. 60% of the population of that school was below poverty. And when I went into that school, what I found was a principal that maintained order and respect. I found teachers that were really teaching great stuff, some of whom were, one was a retired engineer who took that on as his second career, and just some great teachers. I went to a meeting with the teachers that they were having, talking about some of the kids, and I met this one boy who had a discipline problem. It was kind of funny. I won't go into it, but it was silly, but he's a good kid, you could tell, and very smart. He was the fourth of four children raised by a single mother. And the mother had done a great job on the first three kids and on him. She was doing a great job with him until she got caught up in the drugs. Oh. And then the teachers could see just the change in this boy and the acting out, which I think was maybe partially to get attention. And so the teachers, the teachers were on their own time after hours going into that community, into that guy, that boy's house, to go meet the mother, who they'd known for some time from other children. And they were going to sit down and talk to her about what was happening. But, of course, they didn't have a ready fix, and they couldn't be the mentor in the neighborhood. You know, I've often wondered where that boy ended up. Did he follow the track his brothers had followed, which was a really great outcome? You know, they were, I didn't know them, but I went through the story. They were great kids. And did he follow that track, or did he fall prey to what had happened to his mother and follow a difficult path? I can tell you that if somebody like you and the barbers that are also focused on proactively mentoring young men, someone like you could make a huge difference in a life like that, where, you know, mom was a great mom, but now she's got her own personal challenges, and it's gonna impact that child.
You know, Gary, yesterday, I actually had the pleasure of going down to school yesterday. I went down, me and a couple of the barbers that we worked together, four of us. It was four of us yesterday. We had the pleasure of going to my own son's school, his school downtown. And while we were there, it was so interesting because one of the individual women that were there, she was bringing her grandson in there to get a haircut. And it just so happened she's one of the ladies that helped me become what I'm in the barber world. She's one of the people that gave me a chance. And my son's school is Russell Byers. I never knew her grandson went there, but he was a customer of mine for a while. I haven't seen him in a while because his uncle used to bring him, but she hasn't been able to bring him at the time now. So when I went down there, it was like so surprising that he's like, he doesn't let nobody cut his hair. And I looked at him, I said, well, he's going to let me cut his hair. And she looked up and was like, oh, my God. And it was just like an amazing thing, just that alone. And I'm in my son's school. I see how happy he was to see me there doing that.
Yep.
The kids in school. And he's up and down in, and the teachers happy. And we were telling them, you know, we're here just for the kids. It doesn't matter how long or how many come. Just we're going to take care of them. And we were talking to the kids. They were happy. They were enjoying the time. Moms was talking to us about how things were going on, and we were letting them know what program we were a part of. And that was a great thing yesterday. And that was yesterday afternoon. It was from 4 to 6. So me being a part of that at my own son's school, it really made an effect.
That's outstanding. And, you know, it's that constant effort. One of the things, we had a great town hall last night. We were talking about a lot of topics. One of them was some of the things that are going on in schools that aren't good, you know, the child pornography that's now prominent in a lot of schools. And part of the discussion that came out of that is the discussion about the complacency. And there was a man there, I'd say, I think he said he was 37 years old, father of, I think, more than one child, maybe two or three kids. I can't remember. And he was asking, where are the dads? Because, you know,
I've been asking that for years.
Yeah, we haven't seen the fathers getting as involved in these school issues and sort of fighting to defend their children from the pornography, and which is really devastating to go to school and, you know, this incredible pressure with sexuality that is in all these schools now. He was asking that question, and the reality is that one of the reasons that we've had some of our problems in this country become so incredibly terrible is because of the complacency, because people say, listen, I maybe could go help, but I'd rather go golfing. I'd rather, you know, I got to go on vacation or what.
Life is too busy and too enjoyable for them to want to step into this fight.
Yeah. And it turns out that our, you know, previous generations didn't have the entertainment options we have.
Right.
And they had time for this. Mm-hmm. It's not that they worked less. It's not that they worked less hard. But somehow they were more present in the children's lives in many cases. Of course, Nothing is, you know, completely universal. So,
but they sat down every night at dinner.
Go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I'm gonna tell you, in our neighborhood, my particular neighborhood in itself, there's a big change in the relationships between mothers and fathers, and that started back in the mid '80s. I'm gonna say that. The mothers and fathers' relationship after being in the relationship is different. They allow the emotions to get ahead of what really matters. Sometimes, you know, the relationship is a good thing or it's a bad thing, and they allow the emotions to control the behavior between them and their children.
Right.
You know, and I'll say that because I was a project of it, and what I'm saying is that the mothers may get mad at the fathers and they don't allow the children to see the kids. Or the fathers may get mad at the mothers and say, well, you take care of them and I'll just stay away or give you money or and that's it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the kids are more than that. Sometimes, I'll be a proud father, tell any father, I tell them, you can't be that way. And I talk to people all the time, brothers that come in and shop all the time. Being a father is just not giving money. Because you giving out money doesn't mean you replace the value of you being there. The value of you being there means more than any of that money will ever buy. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, because I want to show not only my kids that what kind of father they had, but show other fathers out here it's more than just being a father than just giving out money or paying a child support bill or just because she could be down to court. You can't be there with your kids. There's other ways around it. And a lot of these fathers don't know that. They get too incomplacent and upset. Mm-hmm. And they just say, well, listen, I'm going to leave it alone. And like Gary, I told you the story about me being at the baseball field, and I was the only father there besides two other fathers and the coaches. And I was upset when the kid got hurt, and all my guys would say, oh, my God, oh, my God. I'm in my mind saying, young boy, get up. You've been there before.
Right.
You've been down before. Right. So to me, that was a moment in time where I said, you know what? I'm going to be here every day for my son.
Yeah.
To make sure he doesn't see the kid crying looking for his dad to say, get up. And dad ain't there.
Well, and you're right. There's a huge difference in how a mother treats their child when they're hurt and how a father treats their child when they're hurt. And yeah, the child needs both of those. Like, sure, they need the mother's comfort sometimes, but a lot of times they need the dad saying, get up, brush yourself off, keep moving. You're going to be fine because you need to learn resilience.
Yeah. And now that also teaches accountability in itself, because now these kids grow up to be men more so than babies. And they're looking for, when they do something, they're looking for mom to bail them out of everything. And mom can't be there every single time. Once you're in that level of where there's no help, you can't think your mom's going to help you. Because once you get behind them bars or you're in front of that judge, there's nothing your mom can say to make that judge's mind change besides what you've done.
Right. You know. Yeah,
I'm sorry, Gary.
That's all right. I mean, you know, we're up against the clock now. We're gonna have to move on. But I really appreciate you calling in and giving us some more time. I had a great time with you and the guys last week, and the reason is because I find it inspiring that you are proactively going out and trying to make a difference in these lives, because we've all seen the wreckage when there isn't a good male role model, when there isn't a father or an uncle or a somebody that steps up. We've all seen the wreckage in lives that are broken because these boys get into a track that, and when they become men, it's either permanent incarceration or the drugs. I mean, some of them, obviously, there's a number of them that make it. Some make it. We need more to make it.
Yeah.
We need to change the ratio. We need to get more of these young men to make it through. So Rock, thanks again. Thanks again for...
I'm going to leave y'all with this, Gary.
Yeah.
Love and hate is a learned behavior.
That's right.
And our kids need to learn more love than hate.
Absolutely.
There you go. Well, thank you for joining us on The Conservative Voice, and thanks for all you're doing to impact those lives.
Anytime, Gary. I appreciate you having me on, and y'all have a great day.
Thanks,
Rock.
Yep. Bye-bye. There are people out there in the community making a difference everywhere, and it's tremendous. And this complacency problem is maybe our greatest threat to our national security.
The couch, our enemy, the couch.
We always say public enemy
Joneses.
Number one is the couch.
The couch and the Joneses. You got to keep up with the Joneses. You don't want them looking at you funny. And then the couch is, enticing.
It's so comfortable.
It is really comfortable.
I could spend 2 hours on the couch, scrolling through Netflix shows and, world stops.
Yeah.
But, the good news is there are a lot of folks that got off the couch.
Yeah.
And one of them is...
Or split their time with the couch.
That's right.
Or do some of it on the couch. Like, there are ways to incorporate the couch in our activism.
You could sit on the couch while you're, sending emails to government officials.
Right.
There are all kinds
of
things, But there are a lot of folks in the last few years since 2020 who have become active, who have seen what's happened. Look at where the government's going. Look at where the nation's going. These problems. Again, think of this. Since 2020, since 2021, we're at 400,000 dead Americans from fentanyl, heroin, and xylazine.
Yeah.
400,000.
Yeah.
And it's not a national crisis. And this issue of pornography in the schools. And we still have Americans that are saying, well, that can't be real. It just can't be real.
I know.
But we saw it last night. But a lot of folks got off the couch in different ways and did what they found important. And one of those, of course, was our next guest, Shannon Grady, who was with us last night for a fantastic town hall. She did a wonderful job. And
the questions were endless. Everyone just kept asking her questions. And if you haven't seen the town hall from last night, we actually did live stream it on our Twitter. And we're live streaming right now on Twitter at TC Voice WWDB. So you can see us live on the radio. And then if you look back at last night, you can see both Phoenicia and Shannon giving their presentations and all the awesome questions they were asked. It was a lot of questions.
It was. Oh, the crowd was incredibly engaged. And so, Shannon, welcome to The Conservative Voice. Again, you've been with us before, but welcome back to The Conservative Voice on WWDB.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back again.
Yeah, and thanks for your time last evening. It was a great conversation. And where in your earlier conversations here, you were talking more about your Moms for Liberty work and fighting child pornography in the schools and this incredible thing that's happening in the schools where they're even putting psychological testing in front of kids that third-party companies own. I mean, all these things that are unimaginable that parents don't know. But last night, you shifted gears. And last night, you instead started talking about our rights and the Constitution. And it was a fascinating discussion. And you started with the Declaration of Independence, where it all began. So, tell us a bit about that part of your journey, because you got off the couch twice, once for the schools and then once here. What happened?
Yeah. Well, it's as an American, we hear about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, and, we repeat those words, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. But most of us don't really know what that means. Like, what does that mean? And what did our founding fathers truly fight for? And it really wasn't until 2020 when, you know, the government actions became so egregious that, you know, I was just a person. I never got involved in politics. I just lived my life.
Mm-hmm.
I did my thing. You know, I really was a, you know, what the political savvy people would call a low informed voter. you know, just didn't really want bother. I just did my thing, you know, raised my kids and, you know, was happy and, you know, dumb, fat and happy American, but, you know, I'm not really dumb or fat, but you know how the saying goes, you know, just live my life. I just didn't want to be bothered. And, you know, it was, you know, it was once it got real uncomfortable when they want to put masks on children and masks on me in order to, you know, go outside or go mm-hmm. to school or go to the store. That was when I was like, well, that's not happening. I'm like, I don't care who's giving an order, who's giving a mandate, whose rule it is. It is not happening. And I just, you know, at the time, I didn't really know why. It was just in my gut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't know why. I didn't know how. I just knew that I'm an American and I have the right to say no, and it's not happening. So that was kind of like the more thing that jolted me, you know, into awakening, if you will.
Mm-hmm. It is an awakening. I mean, that's what it is, right? I mean, we're all sort of going through our lives, and then we realize, wait a minute, you know, our family, our community, our state, our nation are all in trouble. And
yeah, it's just like, you've pushed it too far. You've pushed it too far. And, you know, it seems as if myself being one of them, they awoke in the mama bears, you know, mm-hmm. and that's just not a force you want to mess with, you know, so which is why, you know, the propaganda machine, you know, turned, you know, the moms, you know, standing at school board meetings, you know, they're domestic terrorists and all these other, it's like, that's a joke, guys. Like, we're really like so scary.
Right. Well, you mean it's silly. But it was in fact done. I think it was the August, I'd say, I have to look, but I think, say, August 13th of 2022, I think, is when the FBI designated parents that go to school board meetings as terrorists. And it was an official Homeland Security document, the update on terrorism in America. It was official. Look around August 13th of 2022 if you want to find it. I'm not, that's probably close to the date.
Right. I mean, the standing up for kids, you evil women. I mean, it's just insane. And whether you agree or not, you know, and that was the whole thing. And, you know, it was really that at that point where I really kind of started understanding the essence of liberty.
Hmm.
And, you know, Moms for Liberty, you know, contrary to popular belief and propaganda, you know, we're not funded by dark money. It came about during, I'm not one of the founders by any means, but, you know, the organization came about through that whole COVID crisis. And it was really about freedom, individual freedom, you know, really, really standing on the fundamental principles of America and asserting what those things mean, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. And, you know, it's not like we were going out there saying, hey, you can't wear a mask or you need to take yours off your face. Is that we want the choice. We want to have the option. If I feel afraid and I think a face diaper is going to protect me, then I'll put one on. But that, you know, your belief of whatever it is that you think that thing's going to do, that's your problem. That's your issue, but go ahead, go for it. Have fun. You know, so that was really kind of when my journey began of really trying to figure out, like,
now you slid something in there really quick. All right. Yeah. I don't know if listeners were following tracking close enough to track the phrase face diaper. I don't know.
We went out and bought those like gauzy ones that you could completely breathe through. They were see-through essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know.
But the point, and I watched you explain this to a school board at a school board meeting quite effectively. The problem is that these things didn't perform the protection or provide the protection that parents were told they did. That if you remember, Fauci said they do, then he said they don't, then he said they do, then, you know. But there's still people that believe that somehow that mask was going to protect them from – the scourge.
Without regard for the century of studies that proved they were ineffective. A century of studies, but 2020 changed that.
And my whole point, and that's actually my real job, my real background is as a physiologist. And my whole thing was, hey, you need proper informed consent. These things are being used as an emergency use authorized product, but they are in fact harmful. They are creating a hazardous environment for breathing. The school had the obligation per their ESSER COVID rules, A, B, C, D, E, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. the first thing was come up with a masking policy. And that was the whole thing. They just needed a policy. It didn't say to get those ESSER funds, they didn't have to put a mask on the face. They just needed a policy regarding masks. But Section D of that same requirement for the ESSER funds was to comply with the ASHRAE ventilation standards. Well, that's why I did the live demonstration with a CO2 monitor under the mask at the board meeting to show them within 1 minute of where you are outside the ASHRAE ventilation standards.
Which
you're over 1,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide. You know, it's kind of funny, all the people pushing the masks, you know, wearing a mask by themselves in their car, driving an electric car because they're afraid of, you know, 300 parts per million of CO2 in the environment. They're breathing in 32,000 parts per million of CO2 in their mask. It's like, what brain cells do you guys have? Like, you know, so inform the public of the risks. Let people decide. If I'm so afraid of a virus that I need to suffocate myself, then go for it. But that was my whole stance.
Your presentation, I remember, you know, screen recording that presentation and sharing it out in Westchester because, you know, we were all fighting the same fight individually within our school districts. We were being told the health department was in charge. Then we were told the districts were in charge. And all us parents who were pushing back were saying it's not safe. It's not healthy. There needs to be choice. And when you did that presentation, I mean, it was a godsend, truly, because it was a physical representation of what we were talking about. And, you know, it helped tremendously, at least in terms of radicalizing other parents to stand up and get involved. It didn't change the district's minds at any juncture, but it certainly did get other people off the couch and get them involved and speaking up.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, that was really like the catalyst. And, you know, and then it was really, you know, like I said, I didn't really know why. I just knew there was never going to be a scenario where there was going to be a mask on my face or my children's face.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of learning, okay, I don't have to do this, but I need to be able to articulate it. I need to be able to defend myself. I need to be able to assert my rights properly. Because, you know, if you don't know your rights, you have no
right. Right.
Because how many people complied?
Everyone.
Everybody.
Everyone.
Complied.
Yep. Too afraid to stand up.
And people are like, I didn't wear one since day one. I would bring packs of kids into Target maskless. And people are like, what happened? I said, nothing. The manager would chase us around and I'd tell him to get away from us.
Yeah.
Nothing happens, guys.
Like, well, people are terribly afraid of authority, even if that authority is the Target manager who has zero authority.
Right.
So, and you know, we saw that over and over again, example after example of people with very little to no authority finding themselves with a little bit of authority and taking it to the next level, which was a really wild thing to witness.
It seemed like the petty tyrant became the major player in America.
Oh, yeah. And like I laugh at that. So I'm not a good representation for that. You do that in front of me and I'm going to laugh. And then that's going to make you really mad.
Right.
But it's my natural response to it.
But this all. So you started out, in your words, you know, as one of those low information voters. You were not politically active. You weren't paying attention to your rights. You just sort of knew you had them. And then this begins to happen, and obviously you began to do some work because you now have a deep understanding of your rights, an understanding of the Constitution, not just the words and that maybe you could recite a clause or two, but what they actually mean. And then how those most critical words impact us in our daily lives. So So where are you now, you know, in this journey to discovering that we have to defend our rights, because if we don't, to, in your words, if you don't stand up for your rights, you have no rights.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, where I am in the journey is that, you know, over the last 3 to 4 years, I've really taken a deep dive. And it's not easy. It takes work. It takes reading. It takes comprehension. It takes research and reading Supreme Court cases, reading different cases in different areas. But where I'm at in my journey is really, really the aha moment is that, you know, you hear people saying, oh, the system's corrupt, the courts are corrupt, mm-hmm. this is corrupt and that's corrupt. It's a, actually, guys, I'm sorry. The people, we failed. We failed in our duty. And they're laughing at us because we don't know our rights. And we just easily comply. And it's not that we're out there, you know, trying to cause problems or trouble. It's just that simple thing that, you know, they've been unchallenged. They've the administrative state, and, you know, people, you hear people talk about the administrative state, but most people don't really actually know what that is.
Right.
They can't recognize it when it's infringing upon your life daily. You don't even realize what is administrative, what applies to the people. And so, you know, you see these T-shirts coming around, we the people, everybody talks about it. But I'm like, do you really know what that means? So it's really taking the foundation of this country, the fundamental principles are so valuable and so key if you truly can understand them and assert them. So just the terms life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, just in some of the supremacy clause of the United States Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
The Constitution shall be the supreme law of the land. So, you know, when you've got the administrative state, it's an illusion. The administrative state has created an illusion that they govern you, they control you, and they have power. We saw these petty tyrants. You know, people get, you know, excited when they have a little bit of power. They think, you know, the government controls the people. So it's, you know, the one of the basic things I like to start out with explaining this is the hierarchy. What is the hierarchy of just the fundamental principle of how the greatest country, you know, that's ever, you know, the great America experiment,
mm-hmm.
is we have a hierarchy and we have to stand on it. And if we stand on it, then we can be successful. So the, you know, the hierarchy and understanding what that actually means. So, you know, because I hear people say all the time, well, the Constitution grants us our rights. And I was like, that's fundamentally wrong, guys. Like, you've got to start listening to your words and get the words right, because everything that's happened, mm-hmm. and how our rights have been taken away or subverted is because of the subversion of language. And you're not really listening to the words, you're just kind of following along. So the hierarchy is we've got natural/God's law is supreme, is on top. So we as humans, we come from, you know, nature, we're creations of nature, creations of God, you know, whatever your belief system is, we are a, you know, creation of this earth. So we have what's called fundamental unalienable rights,
mm-hmm.
that existed before the Constitution. So man, we are, you know, a creature of the earth. We created the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Man created the Constitution. And man created government. And government creates statutes. So there's a maxim of law that basically the power which is derived cannot be greater than that which it is derived. So the man is supreme. Then you have Constitution, which basically gives the government, it basically enumerates the government authority. It's created to secure our rights, our natural rights, our fundamental rights. And those fundamental rights are basically the things that are infringed upon basically every single day. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So basically, mm-hmm. encompasses parental rights. It encompasses property rights. It encompasses right to work. It encompasses right to travel. It encompasses, you know, pretty much anything you could possibly do, as long as you do no harm. It's really that simple. We have, you know, liberty basically means freedom to do what you want without undue influence, as long as you act morally, as long as you do no harm. So as long as you're doing no harm, you have the fundamental right to do it. And the Constitution was created, and it's now very obvious and written out specifically to essentially, hey, government, we know you're going to try to infringe upon these fundamental rights, so we're going to write them out. So, you know, for instance, the right to bear arms shall not be infringed. When you see all of these things, you know, in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and even in your state, people kind of overlook the state constitution. Pennsylvania state constitution is great. You know, it has a Declaration of Rights. It doesn't counter anything in the federal constitution. It just basically strengthens a lot of the stuff that's in the federal constitution. Mm-hmm. But it's really understanding that document essentially limits government and it enumerates their powers. So enumeration of powers is a good concept to understand. If it's not specifically stated that government entity can do it or has authority over whatever, they can't do it. That's what that means. So if they don't have specifically enumerated powers, they can't do it. So that was one of the things in the masking. The school is a government entity.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, okay, by what authority do you have that allows you to say you can't come to school in this Commonwealth unless you put a face diaper on, unless you suffocate yourself?
Well,
by what authority?
And we saw throughout that whole lockdown the most clear examples of government at all levels exceeding its authority. And there's a silly one that I always am annoyed by, this idea that your township supervisors can decide what kind of bag you can use to take your groceries home.
Oh my gosh.
How does that become the providence of the government? How is that their what? They don't. It's silly for them even to continue to take these kinds of things. We've got just about a minute and a half left, Shannon. So, you know, you've been on this journey. You've obviously gone deep into the Constitution and the law, and I know that you have you've defended your own personal rights. When they've been infringed upon by government entities that exceeded their authority.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have time to get into the whole story now.
No.
So we're going to have you back to go through that maybe.
Yeah,
can I actually comment? You said something about controlling the language and how important it is for us to recognize the words that we use and the language that you use. And, you know, I read 1984 last summer again because my son had it on his reading list. And, you know, the party that controls external reality through the control of the mind uses the language to do it, uses mm-hmm. the words to do it. I said recently, mm-hmm. we lost the abortion battle when they made it about women's health care. Well, there's no care happening there.
No.
There's termination happening there. But they change the language and the words that we use in an effort to subvert what is rightfully ours.
And they're very, very good at it.
Very good.
Well, Shannon, thank you so much for joining us again last night and today. We appreciate your time. And we will be back in a few minutes on The Conservative Voice, WWDB AM 860.